car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. We are coming to you, as always, from Strongbox West in Atlanta. And today, around the table, we have...
Ronnie.
Becky.
Ben.
Becca.
And I'm Mickey. Becky said something a while ago that I wanted to revisit real quick for this, and you said you don't like driving a whole lot. Is that true?
I do. I try to get out of it as much as I can.
Why?
Combination of things. I am not very good at it. I get irked too quickly. I did a stint living outside of the country. I lived in Japan for a while, and I think the convenience of public transportation over there spoiled me. I really got used to not having to factor in driving, like the actual activity of driving. Of course, I was on subways and trains or whatever in Japan, but I could read or I could play on my phone. I was less part of my day was actually going into the driving mm-hmm. activity. And when you're not very good at it, it's just not as enjoyable as something I could be doing.
So you're saying essentially it's just easier to let someone else do it.
Yeah, that's what I got him for. He enjoys it. He's much better at it. So if we go anywhere, he drives.
Yeah, that's cool. I thought maybe you might have had some other reasons about just not liking to drive or... But I started to drive Jen around, and she doesn't mind my driving. In fact, she says, I'm seeing a whole lot more now that I can be a passenger. I'm like, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. You notice more when you're the passenger. Anyway. All right, so we got a few things left on the board that I wanted to, you know, quickly touch on today. The first thing is Renault Audi shenanigans. And I think Ronnie had written that up, and a couple of us chimed in already on what's been happening and with these execs.
Yeah, it's a little bit of current events more than anything. If you haven't heard about it, it's usually rare for car matters like this to reach mainstream media, in my opinion. But forgive the mispronunciation. Carlos Ghosn is what I'm going to say his name sounds like. He was actually the CEO that ended up saving Nissan a number of years ago. I think it was around 97, 98. Nissan was having terrible financial troubles. He was the president of Renault at the time. And he somehow found potential with Nissan. And so he decided to pick them up, and he really turned their game around. I mean, you can argue the quality of the vehicle in that time period from 98 up to like 2002. But the fact of the matter is he got them back on the map, and he kept them from becoming bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, he's kind of an iconic figure. He kind of oversaw the whole Renault-Nissan alliance, and then eventually I think it was Mitsubishi that got merged into that.
And then what happened?
And then anything that happens in high-level politics happened. He is accused of, I think it's money laundering? What kind of fiscal shenanigans was it? Oh, yeah, salary fraud.
Salary fraud.
Yeah, so I think it's the common case of he was reporting his earnings being one thing, and his actual earnings being substantially, substantially higher to help avoid taxes. And it goes a number of different ways, right? So if you tell your people that you're making $500,000 out of the gross, if your annual income is $500,000 out of your gross profits, and you're actually taking home $1.5 million, all that money that could be invested in workers or research and development or technology or amenities or anything like that, that's money lost straight to an individual. So I think it drummed up quite a stink for a lot of people because it's a huge ethics issue, particularly when you're overseeing international branding. This isn't just a consolidated French conspiracy or consolidated Japanese conspiracy. It's interrelational. So if you're screwing up in France and that screws up numbers in Japan, then there's all kinds of cultural tension and political tension that happens in the midst of all of that. It's not good stuff.
Well, I had this reaction too, but not in the same way. It's like the other executive that got arrested was the Audi exec. What happened to him?
I think that's the tail end of the diesel.
Dieselgate.
I can't even say it without losing it a little bit because it's like, geez, Volkswagen, you own everything.
Yeah.
Why would you do this?
It's a good question.
And I think it comes to greed. You know, I think that's the bottom line. I mean, again, Carlos's crime was underreporting his salary. So, you know, he just wanted more money, and it comes down to the human condition of when is enough enough. And apparently it's not when you're in these positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
So for the Audi president to make a decision of it's not just that he turned a blind eye to the engineer saying, hey, we can code in properly passing emissions code. And then when the customer goes for a drive, they'll pass. He oversaw it. He didn't just turn the blind eye to it. It was like, right. Yeah, that's totally cool. Let's make this happen because I want this product out there.
Right.
Rather than just spending the extra time and the extra money to develop a diesel system that will pass all international standards.
Right.
And that will play by the rules. They just wanted to kind of shortcut it while maintaining all their salaries and bonuses and everything else. Like, man, if you're making $3 million a year and you have the largest automotive corporation branch in the world, you know, the only one that rivals it is Fiat and GM. You know, when you have that much power,
don't screw up.
Don't lose the extra $350,000 a year. I mean, maybe I'm being a bit ignorant or naive in the numbers, but just do the right thing so you can develop a long-lasting, you know, product.
I promise you guys that if I ever make $3 million a year, I'm not going to sacrifice my integrity to do it.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking because I think we talked about this on a previous episode where car manufacturers used to be about passion and they were always all about breaking the mm-hmm. limits, exploring in terms of what can and can't be done. And I guess back then there wasn't as much regulation to be concerned about environmentally, and that's where a lot of those issues weren't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But now in a waking day of modernism in terms of environmental knowledge and what may or may not be happening with climate change, I'm not going to choose one side or another, but if it is a thing, we have a footprint that we are leaving behind in terms of the automotive community. So from that end, we have due diligence to be proactive and forward moving and forward thinking, sacrificing our profits a little bit, even if that means the company has to go private because, you know, investors and shareholders only care about progression in numbers, right? Mm-hmm. They care about the guaranteed upside.
But I mean, we've noticed this because it has something to do with cars, but I don't think that this conduct is limited to car execs.
Not at all.
No, not in the least. Which is kind of sad because I feel like I'm a nerd at heart, and so I get to watch these industries that started off as nothing. Like car industry was a very small crowd, and they were they weren't an elite crowd, but they were definitely like a very fanatical crowd, and so they cared more about their product than anything. If you made your fellow car enthusiast happy, you know, that was great, and that's kind of the energy that you experience at car shows. You're surrounded by fellow car people that are just happy to see this technology evolving and seeing the artistic and intrinsic beauty of what automotive engineering is.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as you start getting power-hungry political figures in that say, oh, we can turn this into a cash cow. And they can. Like, they do a great job of marketing and they, you know, really enrich the lives of those enthusiasts fiscally,
mm-hmm.
they take it several steps too far. And without having any expertise in that area of, you know, marketing and finance and so on and so forth, it's hard to rein those kinds of powerhouses in. Be like, hey man, stop. Mm-hmm. You're about to ruin a really good thing. And I kind of feel like we're on that dawn with, if anyone follows video games and esports, that industry is still run by a bunch of nerds,
mm-hmm.
but it's turning into a multi-billion-dollar industry very quickly. And if the wrong power-hungry people get their hands in it, then it just ruins it. And, you know, you end up with scandals and hurt feelings for the wrong reasons, and it's bad stuff.
It's always bad stuff. But I think that's the other part of it is, like, whenever I have this saying that trust is always a cornerstone of civilized living, and whenever you decrease trust, you erode civilized living, right? So trust is an integral part of what it means to have an enfranchised community, and why do we keep sacrificing trust? And it keeps happening over and over again. but I guess that's right. Also another podcast. So
yeah, it's hard to say. I don't.
We should do a self-help podcast.
I'm curious to see what would happen to Renault and Nissan in the long term with all this, and Mitsubishi, but no one really cares about Mitsubishi anymore. Yeah. I don't think this is really going to affect them. I don't think much is going to affect Audi and Volkswagen Group either. And it's a difficult scenario to kind of separate yourself from, because if the CEO is doing something bad, then you want to say the manufacturer is bad. But the manufacturer employs millions of people that are just trying to do a job.
They're just trying to make a buck.
Right, exactly. So why should they be punished for the horrible decision of the head? And if anyone that works in corporate America, if you're one of those low-ranking members, you really have no influence on that top-ranking member. You can't say to anyone, this person's garbage, we need him out of our company, he shouldn't be heading our company.
Right.
That usually just gets you fired.
Right.
you can't displace that high power position person.
All right, moving on. I have in front of me a headline that I found on Jalopnik that said a Tesla Model 3 performance was disqualified from Global Time Attack podium because, quote, electricity is not a fuel. And I'm like, what? So apparently the driver of a Tesla Model 3 performance equipped with the new track mode made it to second place at the Global Time Attack Superlap over the weekend. This was some weeks ago. And with a time of 2 minutes and 2 minutes and 0.78 seconds. But halfway into the podium ceremony, he was told his run was successfully challenged by a fellow competitor, Electric Reports. So electricity, you see, was not listed as an approved fuel. And apparently he had to leave the podium. And I'm thinking, why? What? I mean, if he beat you, he beat you. Why is this?
Well, it sounds to me like a rulebook issue at this particular event. Yes. And if that challenge was successful, then I wonder, why didn't somebody catch it when he was signing up?
Right.
So I actually know the president of Global Time Attack. Great guy. Love him to death. Mm-hmm. And it's a very rock in a hard place situation, because the rulebook is, I mean, it's gospel when it comes to any racing series.
Sure, yeah.
And everything is to the letter. And you really, I mean, to memorize the rule book is insane. Like, it's, you can know a lot of it. You can know the ones that people are always trying to push, because ultimately in racing, it's not how great of a car you can build or how great of a driver you are. It's right. How well can you cheat. And I think I've mentioned that before in a previous episode. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, there are excellent builders, there are excellent tuners, there are excellent drivers, so on and so forth. But the extra edge usually often comes from a bit of an underhanded cheat that isn't so apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the case of the Model 3, I would absolutely say, you know, it should be able to drive.
It should be able to compete.
Yeah, it should definitely be a competitor. But if the rule book specifically states a limit of fuel usages, because you're not allowed to use, I wouldn't know personally what you aren't allowed to use. Like, I don't know what an illegal fuel is. But if the rule book specifically says your vehicle must run on this fuel, this fuel, this fuel, or this fuel, you know, I think maybe to avoid diesel engines, I don't think diesels can compete. So it may say your vehicle must run on gasoline or, what is it, ethanol, then that's what the rule says. Mm-hmm. And anything outside of that technically is disqualified, which sucks.
Well, it also makes me wonder if they looked upon the electric thing as sort of being a loophole anyway. It's like, wait, it's not a liquid fuel, therefore it's not fuel.
Well, plus too, with any kind of racing, there is a scrutineering or tech inspection process before any car makes it to the track, and it should have been caught at that point, in my opinion.
Yes.
Now, of course, since it's a privately run event, I presume then, you know, the powers that be still have the power to do this to the guy. But
yeah, know, no, but still, I think that's my whole point is,
yeah,
why didn't they catch it at first? Why did
exactly.
it matter? To interrupt an actual awards ceremony to make that happen.
Well, it came from a fellow competitor's challenge. So it was probably whoever's in third and fourth place that they're sour that this guy just bought a Model 3, stripped it out, put some great tires on it, and then maybe a program because they're so ballistically fast.
Yes.
If you haven't driven a Tesla yet, holy smokes, like they are so fast.
Yes.
So salty number three or four probably took the rule book and said, oh yeah, look, this, 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 and then went to, you know, the directors or the tech team and was like, hey guys, you forget this rule.
Right.
And, you know, you're allowed to challenge right. and do a retech and like, well.
At which point they probably just have to admit it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know?
Well, it's still just weird. And I know that, you know, I think we're looking at cars being the way of the future anyway. I would be surprised if those guys don't at least alter their rules in the future.
I think in the next season they will
yeah.
allow that, you know, electric assistance or electric engines to be
yes.
allowable.
You said rock and a hard place earlier, which brings us to our next item, which is sex and autonomous cars. and the article has been in a number of places that people are speculating that autonomous self-driving cars are going to mean people are going to be fooling around in them a lot more. And I frankly hope so.
Well, yes, because if you pay attention to the studies that are circulating, there's also one that's gotten a little bit of press lately that says that sex as a whole is on the decline lately.
On the yeah.
That's so sad.
For reasons that, oddly enough, are partially blamed on technology.
Yeah.
But
don't yeah, don't point at me when you say that.
That was not intentional. Dad. Tell me about your mother.
Wow, Freud, what?
Yeah, Freud was a hell of a guy. Anyway, but yeah, so if people are getting it on a little more, that's great yeah. overall. But the other thing to consider, too, is that I think that autonomous cars are largely going to belong to large fleets that we will use on a subscription basis. You'll fire up your Google Mobility or Apple Car app on your phone and say, I need a ride, and one will show up. Mm-hmm. Because they're parts of large fleets, you know, profit is going to be a huge, huge thing. And any time you spend cleaning these cars is going to be a cost and downtime. Mm-hmm. So I think that the subscription-based autonomous cars are not going to be very clean, whether or not you fool around in them or not. So mm-hmm. let's all just consider this for the future.
I mean, I can't imagine it could be any worse than an actual Manhattan taxi these days.
Mm, probably not.
What are people doing in Manhattan taxis?
When's the last time you were in a Manhattan?
I was in one about 2 years ago. It wasn't that dirty, but it didn't have the stock rear seat either.
Yeah, I've been in some that smelled very suspect.
I have the visual image of people having sex in the back of a taxi, just considering the topic, and I don't know, maybe people are. I don't know.
Who knows?
And since the taxis are still driven by human, then that raises some whole other questions as well.
Exactly.
HBO used to have a series called Real Sex Live or something.
Something like that.
Something along those lines. And there was an episode where they spoke about people that would fool around in the back seats of taxis.
Wasn't there a show called Taxi Cab Confessions or something?
Yes, there was that too.
Is it the same sort of thing, or was that all just manufactured drama for reality TV?
Oh,
God. I was like 14 at the time, so everything was real to me.
Ben, real quick, give us a Lotus update, and then let's call it a day.
Well, I'd been holding back from an update for a while because it seemed like not that much was actually happening, but it kind of feels like I can work with that. The dashboard still isn't back in, and the main reason lately has been I have had some trials and tribulations with the heater fan. The motor seemed okay. Of course, the motor screws onto the heater, and then the heater screws into the car so that you can't get to the motor. Then the dashboard screws in on top of the heater. So if that motor's bad, the dashboard and the heater all have to come out. It's a hell of a surgery. So I was just about ready to screw the dashboard down permanently when checking all the circuits and testing everything, the heater fan wasn't working. Okay, yank it all out. And it's a motor that was made by Smiths. They made a lot of instruments and electrical stuff for British cars. Lucas is the name we all know, but Smiths did at least as much stuff in the 60s and 70s. The Smiths motor, you can't really buy a direct replacement for now. There are one or two out of Britain that are kind of reproductions. I've since been talking with other Lotus enthusiasts. I got a Smiths motor out of a Cortina Mark II that looked like it would fit. Turned out it didn't.
Oh, man.
Since then, I've ordered a Chinese-made motor that another enthusiast tells me can be adapted to fit, that the motor size is decent, but it doesn't have the mounting flange. So I've ordered it. If I can't work with it, I'll send it back and do something else. But all this, it's a little motor about the size of a softball. But without it, you don't blow heat in the car and things like that. So that's going on. I've started taking the rear end apart in the meantime while I'm waiting for the right heater motor to come. And I've run into a thing there with the wishbones in the rear, the control arms, whatever you want to call them. Where they attach to the chassis, they've got two bolts with Nylock nuts on them. And you can just barely reach the nuts with a box end wrench. And I've been trying to figure out what size, because it's not a size I have. And reaching in there with something else is tricky. But I think I've got that figured out now. So it's just kind of one thing after another.
It's a restoration job.
Yes, it is. I'm coming up on 3 years of ownership now, and I still have only driven it that first eighth of a mile back at the beginning when everything was wrong with it.
Good grief. So,
but it's getting there. It is getting there.
Well, I hope you get the fan thing ironed out quickly.
Me too.
Because I know that's your next biggest hurdle, right?
Once the dashboard's back in, I will feel like a mountain of progress has been achieved.
Yes. Cool. Well, thank you for the update.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else we can touch on real quick? I think that's the end of our list.
I think so.
As always, we're glad for your listening participation. Thank you for being part of the Think About Cars family. We always welcome your feedback and your questions at thethinkaboutcars.com. We would very much appreciate your help raising a little money for better gear, so please find our Patreon. What else?
I think that's about it. Appreciate y'all checking in.
Yes, thanks very much, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day, and be careful out there.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.